be here and see this kind of a gathering. I think I was at one of your churches only, so I know a third of you, but I think I know a few others, see some familiar faces, but I feel like I have a couple things against me, and that's normal. I was the youngest in our family, so it just, the tradition keeps on. One is that, I don't know if I should say this, but Dale actually preached his two messages already. And he actually preached this one before, and somehow I got roped into doing one of them. So I said, well, why don't you just give me your notes and I'll be set. And he said, well, no, then it wouldn't be the Spirit. So we trusted the Spirit, and then I'm sitting here and listening to Dale say some things that I thought I was going to say. And so I really feel it's really hard following an act like that and to come up with something fresh. And hopefully you can stick with me, because the other thing that is against me is that the next thing on the agenda is lunch. So, and I was getting a fear also that it wasn't a clock, but I figured that would be your problem, not mine, because, yeah, some of us have tendencies. To everything, there is a season. You fellows over here on my right have been bored, and you don't have Sunday school to go to, so I have a question for this group of chairs right here. Which is your favorite season? Now, in the scripture we're going to, it says there's a time to speak and a time to keep silence. So right now is a time to speak. Go ahead. Any brave, I know you, yes.
Summer.
Summer, why? It's warm, okay. Is that it? Not sure. Go swimming. Ah, now we're talking. How about any other brave souls over here? Yes. Spring, why? Ah, yes. Brother Dale was talking about perfect, right? Spring is that perfect. What is the perfect temperature? 72 degrees, something like that? I won't ask you girls. Which is your favorite season? It would be interesting to take a poll. I'm not going to do that. So maybe it is summer. Cicadas buzzing. There's always that neat time when you first hear the cicadas start on that July or August afternoon. It's like, ah, oh, the dog days of summer are here. Yes, we go swimming. We got barbecue, we got chicken, grill on the deck. We can eat outside. We go fishing, bass fishing again. I think you go in the winter, but it's not as fun because you always freeze your fingers. You know, you think back across your lifetime and there's making hay. And there's reunions and there's thunderstorms. You get to go out on the porch and you watch the storm come. You used to stand there and watch the rain come in across the fields. So many fun things. School's out, so we go on a vacation, right? Go take a trip, take a family trip. Or maybe it's fall. And it's just those, kind of like the weather right now. You know, how many of us said, wow, this is September weather, right? And you just want to hang on to it for a long time. And you start to see the leaves change and all the different colors come out. And there's that late summer, early fall where you walk out and all the weeds are in their seed heads and there's a few crickets and bugs buzzing yet. And there's no humidity. It's just perfect. It's jacket weather. And you make apple butter and you go to these apple festivals and you eat an apple. Like October, clear, 65 degrees, it's time to eat an apple. It's just like that time of year. Make a campfire, you know, s'mores. Or maybe it's winter, and the long evenings. Time change, yes, it is dark from 5:30 until bedtime, and it's like you don't have to go outside. You don't have to work. Maybe if you're young and energetic, you want to go skating if it freezes. Sledding, there's snow. The sky turns that steel gray, and it's damp, and your bones hurt. But there's excitement in the air because, it's starting to snow. And so you like throw a log on the fire, and everybody comes inside, and you just sit and do nothing. What reprieve. It's hoarfrost on those frigid mornings. Sometimes it's freezing rain, and it coats all the branches with this crystalline coating. And you don't have to go out and mow the yard or pull weeds. Sometimes you don't even have to wash the van because it's too cold. That's a benefit. You get tired of washing the vehicles. Or maybe it's spring. It's like, ah, it's getting warm again. And those warm spring evenings makes you think back to that evening in May when you first went out with your girlfriend. At least that's when I went. So that May, that warm spring evening is always like, ah, this is what it was like when love was in the air. It was awesome. And you watch out in the trees and you see that first tint of green. And you walk out in the early, in the early spring, and you see the first shoots of the crocuses come up, and you kind of make a note. This year it was February 27th, the crocuses bloomed. Maybe you're one of those that's like, hey, we got the peas in February this year. I don't know if you do that. That's a Lancaster, Lebanon County thing. And there's that first time you mow the yard, right? That first smell of mowed grass, like, ah, oh, there it is again, and oh, it's coming back. The dogwood trees. I've been out on 453 where the redbud trees bloom in the spring already against the gray rock walls, and there's that color palette of just beauty. And then all too soon, the petals fall and we move into summer. But anyway, what if there were no seasons? What if it was just the same? I find it interesting, they say that even at the equator, where there isn't much of a change in the shift of the earth, there's still seasons. You have the rainy season, dry season. And in fact, they tell us that the seasons came because of the flood. Some people think during the flood, the whole earth really took a jolt to the one side, and that's why we have the dramatic seasons that we do. I don't know, we weren't there. But the Bible tells us in Genesis chapter 1, when God made the sun, moon, and stars, he gave them for days and times and seasons and months. I don't have that exactly. It uses the word seasons there. So there was this thing of the moving of time. The word season has this idea of it's a time. In fact, there in Genesis, one of the words that Strong's uses to describe the word seasons is festival. How many have ever been to a festival? Right? So we're going to have it was down in Lancaster County somewhere, they're having a bacon fest. Okay? But those festivals have a start. And now everybody's excited, and we come in, and it's like, yeah, festival. We have food and fun and laughter, and it's the last day of the festival. Time. It's like, y'all were looking forward to whatever you call this here this today, Bible conference or whatever. You're looking forward to it, and you get together, and you see people, and oh, there you are. Yes, good to see you again. And by about 6 o'clock tonight, you're done. Some of you will be done by 12 o'clock probably, or maybe 1:30. You know, it's like, some of the children are already almost done. Time. You know, and Peter had this problem when he was up on the Mount of Transfiguration. They went up there, and Jesus had Peter and John with him, and Moses and Elijah came, and Peter gets all excited. He's like, Jesus, this is great. Would you like for me to build houses? Or tabernacles here, I'll build one for you and Elisha and Moses. Peter was, this is great, let's just stay here, right? And I bring that in because that's how we want to latch on to something and say, okay, you know what, let's just freeze, right here, freeze it. Peter wanted to freeze that experience. Jesus didn't even pay attention to him. Because right about then, God spoke out and everything changed, right? And then he went down from the mountain. When I ask you what your favorite season is, I have no doubt that in many of your minds you start thinking, well, I don't know, what is my favorite season? And how do you determine your favorite season? Automatically, your mind starts going down through, okay, what do we do in each of the seasons? And you start thinking about the positive things we do in each of the seasons. I gave you a whole list of them, right? That's exactly where my mind went. But we have to recognize the fact within every single season there's negative things. Now, I don't know how you are with seasons. I don't know how many, I imagine there's a cross-section of people here where some of us look forward to the change of seasons, and some of us say, let's just keep this. I was with someone last night, and they were like, oh, we're just ready for summer to be done. And I was like, wow. Maybe it's allergies. Okay, fair enough. But I want you to hang on to that thought. What creates your perfect season? What makes you ready for the next one? And it all has to do with the positive and negative things. We could go over some negative things. You like summer? Weren't you around 3 weeks ago? Whatever it was, there was no rain. There was temperatures over 100 degrees. He don't have to pay the electric bill, right? Yeah. Air conditioners are running on high. The electric bills are 400 instead of 200, or whatever your electric bill gets to be. The only thing that grows is crabgrass and thistles. The yards are brown. The fish don't even bite because it's so hot. And then a thunderstorm comes along and blows a tree down, and you have to go clean it up on the hottest morning, Saturday morning of July. Maybe you do like fall, but it gets very dry, and then there's fire hazards. And it's always disappointing. You come home from school that one day, and it's like, there went the cornfield. For some reason, that's always just this downer in my mind. It's just like, there's a beautiful cornfield, and boom, it's bare. You know, the next thing is manure. And you have to clean up all those leaves. Those nice shade trees you had in your yard, all those leaves come down, and you got to deal with them. That was fun when you were a child. You put them on a pile and jump into them, but guess what? You have to get it on the pickup. Or somehow, you always wish for like a really strong wind and just blow them out of the yard, and you'll have to deal with it. It's hurricane season. September, could get a hurricane coming up the coast just like y'all did the other day. We didn't get as much of it, I don't think. And in the winter, there's frozen pipes. The heating bills go up. You have to care for the animals. The dog's water freezes. And the dog decides to have a puppy in the coldest day of February. And you got to put heat mats and lamps and, oh, what a mess. And then the children want to go outside and sled. They come in with their boots and the snow melts and there's water on the floor and there's wet clothing hanging in the furnace room. So let's wish for spring, but then it's mud and it's rain and you try to plant a garden and the frost comes and it freezes the buds off the peach trees and you have no peaches that year. So within every season, there's these negative things, and we need to, when we cope with change and we cope with the changing of seasons, it is more important that what happens within us and what actually happens to us. And unfortunately, as much as we want to get to the next season, we're all at the mercy of God, right? Because he decides when fall is going to get here. God decided that it's not going to become 66 degrees at 9:30 in the morning until today. So that's what my van temperature said. He decided it's just going to be hot most of July and into August, and now I'm going to change it. And that's important to remember, too, because that which we desire, we can't do a whole lot about. There's a whole lot of things in life that we just can't do anything about. Open your Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Our title is, to everything there is a season, there's a time. And the Ecclesiastes writer lists about 15 dichotomies here in this beginning of this chapter, verses 1 through 8. A dichotomy is simply two things that are opposite within the same spectrum. For instance, hot and cold. We're talking about temperature, and you have a dichotomy. One is at one end of the spectrum, hot. The other end is cold. Interestingly as well, many, not all of these, but as you look at this list, and we're going to read down through this list, and I want you to think about this. This thought just came to me as I was sitting here, probably because of something Brother Dale said, but within these pairs, on a number of them for sure, many of them I think, one is a positive and one is a negative, for whatever that's worth. Chapter 3, verse 1, to everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven, a time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to break down, and a time to build up. A time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance. a time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to cast away, a time to rend, and a time to sow, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time of war, and a time of peace. So what do we get from all this? I'm going to go down over here. I'm going to comment on a few of them. I'm not sure. I've questioned what made Solomon pick these 15. I don't know if there's significance in it or not, and I didn't study that hard to try to figure out whether this is like the ultimate list or what it is. But it definitely gets our minds going. I want to just comment on a few of them. First one, a time to be born and a time to die. A new baby is born, it's a time of rejoicing. The positive, right? The time to die. We don't like to think about death. It's going to stare us all in the face someday or another. Some sooner than others. And life is this season. And we go through, we say, the seasons of life. Solomon says there's a time for each one of them. There's a time you're going to be born, and you're going to die. And we have days, and we live those days at the same speed, every single one of us. Sometimes you say, wow, life is moving fast. It's hard to believe we've been living at our house for 16 years now. And it is. I don't know what it is. Perhaps we just get busy. When you're these young people's age, life moves extremely slow. When you get to school here in a couple weeks, you have 180 days, and those 180 days go terrible slow, right? Especially once you get to about February, you will never get done. God does that. He doesn't. The clock moves at the same speed, okay? Let's think about family life for a minute. I guess you'd call it family life. I didn't think of it that way necessarily, but someone made this comment as he observed the seasons of life. This comes from Brother Galen, actually. He says, we are first born, and then we are children to our parents. Okay? Understand that? Like you're the children, mom and dad. And we move on, we come up through life, we grow up, and we get married, and we become parents to our children. We have children. We reproduce. The cycle of life starts over again. And as we age, and our parents age, we become parents to our parents. Some of you here might know what that's like. Instead of going across the yard to my mom and dad and asking them advice, they come over to me and ask me questions. You don't go over there and kind of share what you're going through in life anymore. You just kind of go over there and you just, well, yeah, how much rain did we get? You don't tell them your problems. They tell you yours. And then time moves on, and if we live long enough, we're going to become children to our children. You know, and we start to warn our children, look out. When we get that age, this is what you do, right? But that's the cycle of life. I remember when we were, I don't know how old we were, we had probably, I don't know, 5-6 children from, and they were all the same size, they were all little, down baby, I don't know, 10 years old down, but a sister from our church, we were away for dinner, and she said, yous are at the perfect stage in life. Diaper bag on the shoulder, and it is just wonderful. And I'm like, you are crazy. I don't know what's wrong with you. You know, but you grow, you age, and your children grow up, and you have, and some get married, and your youngest is 9, 10, and you say, yeah, she wasn't that far off. They were all right there, and you just took care of them, and you wiped their nose, and you put them to bed, and it's like, they're all in bed. And if they got out, you said, you go back to bed. And they listened most of the time. You know, I remember thinking, like, will this child ever stop drooling? you know, the diaper was wet all the time, you know, kind of thing. Suddenly, it's all gone. Like, we had no little children. Like, now the grandchild comes around and cries, and it's like, someone make it be quiet. The seasons are moving on, right? It's a time to be born and a time to die. It's a time to plant, time to pluck up. Oh, the joy of planting. Stir up the soil. Go out there, it's barefoot. It's finally warm. You can do this. And you sow. But then the season moves on, and it's time to go out and dig the potatoes. And some reason, it's not near as fun digging them as it was planting them. Like, it was springtime, it was fun, and you go out there and you get a stick that's this long, and you put it down, and you put a potato in the front and one in the back, and then you move the stick, and it's fun. Can I cover the row? Yeah, the children always want to cover the row, but no one wants to dig the potatoes. You ever notice that? Because it's new at the beginning, and then it's old by the end of summer. It's a time to kill, and there's a time to heal. Sometimes there's an animal that's just, you know what, it's not worth calling the vet for that one anymore. You get rid of it. There's a time to invest money into an animal and say, what can we do with it? Can we revive it? Can we keep it going? There's a time to break down. There's a time to build up. You know, sometimes you look at a piece on your house that wasn't built correctly, and the builder says, you know, I think it's better just to rip the whole thing off and build it over. It's a time to weep and a time to laugh. Rejoice with them that do rejoice, weep with those who weep. Laughter doeth good like a medicine, but you don't laugh out of viewing necessarily. Now, sometimes you reunite with people, but we understand as adults there's times where you do the one thing and there's time you don't do that. Okay? It's this awareness of things that are proper in their time. It's time to mourn, a time to dance. There's a time to cast away stones, gather stones. It's a time to embrace. There's a time to hug, and there's a time not to hug. And maybe we ought to use the holy kiss instead of the hug sometimes. You know, we think about that. It's like, just because it's a good thing doesn't mean it's a good thing all the time. You just don't go around hugging everybody. Maybe. So thinking about that fact that good things also have their limits, okay? Time to get and a time to lose. There's a time to keep and there's a time to cast away. There's nothing more enjoyable, I think, than having a dumpster. And we had to flood at our house and we needed a big dumpster to clear out some of the stuff that we gutted the house. Wow, that was fun. You just go up in the barn like, this is going to the dumpster, this is going, and shoo. Maybe I'm a minimalist, but I'm not, I don't think. But there is a time where it's just really refreshing to get rid of clutter and it's gone. There's a time to get, too. Then you go yard sailing and wonder why you bought what you did. Time to keep and a time to cast away. There's a time to rend and there's time to sew. There's time to take that pair of pants with holes this big in them and rip them up. Maybe make rags out of them and throw them away. It might be a time where you fix it up and keep on going with it. There's a time to keep silence. There's a time to speak. Paul tells the women that they should keep silence in the churches, but they should speak to their husbands at home. That's just one example in the scriptures. Sometimes at school, I tell the children, it's time to study, right? Everybody wants to tell another story about what happened, and no, right now it's class time, right? We try to teach our babies in church, and we hold their mouths shut. Okay, these are simple things. There's a time to love and a time to hate. Obviously, we need to love our families, right? But Jesus said, unless someone hates his father and mother and brother and sister, he can't be my disciple. There's a time of war and a time of peace. And my wife had a problem with this. She said, is that true in the New Testament? I said, yes. Who's right? Time of war and a time of peace. Well, I said, not in the kingdom of Jesus, of course not. There's no time for war in the kingdom of Christ, in God's kingdom, right? There's time of war in the world. We live in a fallen world, and God sets up whom he will and turns the king's heart whithersoever he wants to go, and some of that includes war. I don't know what else to make of that. As horrible as it is, perhaps God uses war. And it's interesting to me, Sheila was just over in Poland and they visited Auschwitz. And there it is. You see pictures and it's a blue sky day. It's a totally different picture than what you see. For some reason in the history books, all those pictures are black and white and it's always dismal. I guess there was no color photography back then, maybe. But it's interesting when you stop and think about that. So there they are on those grounds. The buildings are the same. The ground is the same. The barbed wire is the same. And it's a time of peace. People from all nationalities come in together and they walk through there and they think about a time of war when millions of people, hundreds of thousands of people were being slaughtered at the hand of a dictator. It's the same thing you get when you go to the Holocaust Museum. It's the same thing you get when you go to Gettysburg and the dogwood trees are blooming and there's a statue of a general. And it's a wonderful time. It's a beautiful, the fences are really neat that the Park Service put out. It's a time of peace. There was a time of war there. So what do we do with all this? I really grappled with, I happen to know what some of the subjects were on that other program. And as I considered this message, I felt a little bit like a cupcake message. It was pretty. It was cute. Very edible. But a cupcake doesn't last real long. It's like, so what is in this message that can actually take, that's actually worth speaking to a group of three churches who come together as a district? And so we sit here and we talk about life and we all smile and nod our heads. Yes, we know. And that's how life is, right? Mm-hmm. Is that all it's worth? What do we get out of it? Or is it just that cupcake? You eat it and in about half an hour you're ready for something else. Is there anything in this message that will affect the direction of the church? That's worth sitting together for 40 minutes and pondering that will make eternal impacts. I want you to go back in, let's go back into Ecclesiastes, and I want to read some of the verses beyond this. And we need to start by looking at verse 1 again. I want to read this again, just to get it in our mind. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. Now, the Bible uses the word season different places, and it comes from actually different words. This particular word here, season, that like the Hebrew word that it was translated from, has the idea of an appointed time. Appointed. Set time. Now, when you start to think about that, this is not some random event, but it is put in place by someone. I called the eye doctor the other day and said, I want an appointment. The eye doctor set the appointment, 11:30, Friday, August, whatever it was, 9 or 10. They set the appointment. And I was under the mercy of that office, and I was there for an hour and a half. I'm not sure why it takes that long. I didn't get in right at 11:30. That wasn't my appointed time. After all, I suppose I should be there, but, you know, they'll take me back whenever they're ready. Is life some random chain of events where it's just like we're kind of thrown here? Oh, no, that's the evolutionistic point of view, right, where everything's chance and, right, okay, we as Christians don't believe that it's chance, right? So the other day I was in the process of listening to a book. Somewhere along the line I came across the audiobook, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And it's been around for 20, 30 years. And I thought, well, I'm a leader, and a principal at school, and I should probably listen to some good reading, right? Some good leadership stuff. And I hadn't read that yet. I'm not sure where I was all the time, but it's interesting. A lot of good things in it, and I had this message on my mind. I was just turned it on again, wherever it was, and he was talking about the choices you make, being intentional with life, setting yourself a goal and then putting steps in place so that you reach that goal. And I said, That's actually totally opposite of what I'm going to preach about. Let's read verses 9 to 14. What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also he hath set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor, it is the gift of God. I know that whatsoever God doeth shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, or anything taken from it. And God doeth it, that men should fear him, should fear before him. And we're going to stop reading there. This starts to, where it starts to blend over on top of Brother Dale's message. We start thinking now about a greater purpose in life. See, Solomon looked at life and he started to get cynical. If you read the book of Ecclesiastes, it's the writings of a very cynical man. You can see that coming out. It's like, what profit is there? It's all vanity. He said at one point, you know, there's no difference. As the dog dieth, so dieth the man, or the beast, I think he uses. And he's like, it's really worthless because this man comes into life and he works and he builds up and he accumulates and he grows and he gets all this and then he dies and lets it to another, and who knows whether that person's going to take care of it like he did. And as Solomon considered all this, he got very, very cynical. And you see that coming out in verse 9. What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? So we have these seasons of life, and we put ourselves into it, and we work hard, and we raise our family, and we go to work, and we build up a property, and we furnish it, and we make it pretty and nice, and for what? Because we know someday we're going to let it behind, and then what? You fix up the barn, and it's just nice and rustic character, and there it is, and it's like... Isn't there something bigger? He starts to introduce the thought of God in verse 10. I've seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. Oh, there's God. And he starts to give these things so that people live their lives. He's given us opportunity to live life. And then in verse 11, he hath made everything beautiful in his time. God is behind all of this. And he also reckons the fact, right there in the middle of verse 11, he hath set the world in their heart. Now that word world actually means eternity. In other words, God has given man a vision of eternity, that we know about eternity and we realize where we are in this whole scheme of things, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. Some versions use the word yet no man can find out. In other words, mankind has become wise and smart and has figured a lot of things out. And we understand God. We have the whole scriptures here and we can read and understand God. But yet, he says, we cannot find out the work that God does. As good and as wise and as smart and built up as we are, there's still a part about God that we just don't know. We don't know why we have a good day or a bad day. Sometimes we think we know. But do you ever have a day where it's just kind of rotten and you're like, I have no idea. It just isn't going. You're not getting work done. You're just, maybe that's unique. But or you go through a summer where it's just like, it's all good. Or you come through a year and it's like, you know what? We made a lot of money this year in the business. Except I've gotten to the place where I start to get a little leery because then all of a sudden, boom, okay, child needs braces. Oh, God had a purpose for that. So then you start to get suspicious when, money starts rolling. It's like, oh, look out, something's coming. But we don't know why. We don't understand it, why some of us had a really good summer and some didn't. Maybe. What do we know? I have 7 points here. I'm going to go quickly. I see Stephen will soon be going out there to make lunch. Number one, we should enjoy life no matter the season. Verse 12 and 13. There is no good in them but for a man to rejoice and do good in his life. Verse 13, every man should eat and drink and enjoy the... Well, that's my next point, actually. But number one is to enjoy life no matter the season. Okay? Wherever you're at, right here, in the present, enjoy life. That's God's purpose. Solomon recognizes that. There's no good in all this life but for a man simply to enjoy it. You know, and sometimes I think we feel a little guilty for enjoying life, right? You ever feel that way? It's like, well, I'm going to stop at Chick-fil-A, but well, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe you shouldn't. But then maybe there is a time to just stop and get the waffle fries and the Chick-fil-A sauce, say thank you, God, for the money to buy this, and just enjoy them. Now, we can overdo that. I don't want to make that too simplistic, but I think we have to remember to enjoy some things. Paul talked about people that command to abstain from eating of meats, which were created to be received with thanksgiving. So there's that tendency in our world today that people say, well, you shouldn't do this. You know, there's a lot of weird philosophies out there. And we need to be careful that we don't snub God in the face on something that he has given us to enjoy. But let's never forget the one who gave it. Number two, we need to enjoy the fruit of our labor. Verse 13. Every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. There's nothing wrong with feeling satisfied about a job well done. Whatever you do. Just like, that was neat. Did that. I fixed our microwave, I think, yesterday. This little piece in the door bracket. And it had cracked, and so I epoxied it. And it went about 3 weeks and cracked again. Of course, I'm upset at the manufacturer. But then I was like, hey, they do plastic welding. So I went out and got a soldering iron, and I took that, and I melted the plastic together and added some more plastic on top and smeared it together. And I don't know. It's holding yet. But I felt pretty smart about myself. Linford's over there thinking, that ain't going to work. But, you know, we have to we have to enjoy the little gift God maybe gave us somewhere and enjoy that. Don't get self-centered about it. But. Number three, God's purposes are forever. Verse 14, here's where it really gets tying in with what Brother Dale already shared with us. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Okay? There is work that is God's work, and it is eternal, and it's lasting. Okay? God's work will last forever. We need to keep that in focus as we think about the shifting changes. God's work will last forever. His purposes are forever. Think about it. Many of the goals and aspirations we as people have are simply temporal, right? Some of us might have bucket lists. Unless you're a very noble, holy person, probably a lot of those things on that bucket list are temporal. They're not going to do a thing for eternity. Okay? God's purposes are eternal. Number four, we are a part of God's plan whether we comply or not. Verse 14 goes on to say, so whatever God does is forever, right? Nothing can be put to it, nor anything can be taken away from it, all right? Sunday school teacher recently made this comment in Sunday school. He said, sometimes we say, see if I can get this together, I want to be part of God's plan, okay? Like, I want my life to be, I want to kind of commit my life to God to be part of his plan, right? He said, God will use you whether you comply or not. God has a plan, and he will use you, but he doesn't necessarily rely on us to say yes. Nothing can be put to it, and nothing can be taken away from it. You can see that all through the Old Testament where God's plan moved forward. Pharaoh tried to step in. It didn't work. Nebuchadnezzar tried to step in. It doesn't work. Okay? People try to step in. It doesn't work. Something else that I want you to think about, and this is something that I have not spent a lot of time on, so it's one of those I'm just going to put it out there for you to chew on for a while. And I thought about this at the end of the last school year. I was thinking about what to kind of say at the end of the year. There was a group of 10th graders and a couple 9th graders that this was their last year. You know, what do you say to them? And this thought came to me as I was pondering all of this. As you think about, you know, I'm going to let God use me. I'm going to be part of God's plan. As you look through the Bible, many of the big players, will you say, in God's purpose, eternal purpose, none of them, I shouldn't say none, many of them did not go out and I'd like to do something great for God and I think I'm going to go do this. But many of them were just going along in their life and God kind of bang, hits him in the side of the head, if you will, and says, I want you. And half of them says, I don't want to. God said, yes. And they finally comply and go on. See, one of the problems we face in today's world is we're inundated with books exactly like the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And people say, I want to be something great. I'm going to go to leadership seminars, and I'm going to read books, and I'm going to listen to podcasts, and become something. I'm going to be a leader. It's all about leadership. When does God get to say what you're going to do? See, it wasn't like Abraham was going to a lot of seminars like, you know, I think we can do something with this. God just said, I want you to move. Paul, he had a big plan. And God, boom, you're blind now and you're ready to listen. I have a work for you. And actually got Ananias, who didn't want to come either. He said, I'm not going over there. Saul will. No, I want you to go tell him because I have something for Saul to do, and I want you to tell him what that is. Nothing can be put to it, and nothing can be taken away. We get very, very intent on planning our seasons, don't we? Very intent. Sometimes God has to stop us in our tracks and remind us it's not our life after all. It's his. I think that was number 7. John Maxwell said, change is inevitable. Growth is optional. Change is inevitable. I'd like to change that a little bit and say change is inevitable, but faithfulness is not. Change is inevitable, faithfulness is not. In other words, faithfulness is not an automatic response to change. That takes a choice. Don't fear or resist change. We need to look at it. Look at it square in the face and say, where's God in all of this? And look past the change of the seasons and see the eternal purpose that God has already laid out. And his purpose, we cannot add to it or take away from it.